Coming to you live from Victory Lane, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here is the guy who's always the zero in the scoreboard, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to finale coverage of Amazing Race 29, Perfect Strangers. And let me also bring in the woman who always is ready to fly the W, Jessica Lise. Jessica, how are you?
I'm great, Rob.
Yes.
Season's over.
Yes, Jess. This is truly the Amazing Race Perfect Strangers season, as the Amazing Race has now brought the Amazing Race to Chicago, the setting for Perfect Strangers, the sitcom, which of course prominently features the Wrigley Field marquee. Full circle.
Full circle. You know, I really wish that we'd had, like, maybe one of the final tasks could have been to reenact key scenes from the opening credits, like run around a revolving door a whole bunch of times,
right,
get caught in a windstorm.
Go from Meepos to Chicago. It's the Balky leg of the Amazing Race. No, just first off, great finale. Congratulations to Brooke and Scott, winners of Amazing Race 29. You did call your shot here, so congratulations as well to you. And what a season.
I'm so impressed by how much life this twist that we thought was going to be so crappy. I'm so excited by how much life it's breathed back into this show.
Well, we're always wrong. That's the first thing you have to remember. And so if we say something's going to be good, it'll be bad. If we say something's going to be bad, it'll be good. So that's a key thing to remember. But what a fun story this was for Brooke and Scott. And I feel like that I was sleeping on them for a lot of the season because I just felt like that, boy, that Brooke is so negative. At some point, she's just going to tank this thing.
Yeah, and well, we've talked a lot on this very program about how there's a big difference between like being a complainer and being like actively negative. And we have a lot of people that, you know, they get anxious and they say, I don't think I can do this. I don't know. This is scary. But then they come through. And I think Brooke is one of those people, like the negativity wasn't a roadblock for her.
Yeah. Let me throw this out there. You tell me if this is too hot of a take. That I think, though, while Brooke was fine in a lot of the tasks, she overcame a negative attitude at certain points. I think that Scott, just as a solo act, perhaps, if not, I don't know what, you know, you're so much more well-versed in the history of the Amazing Race, but maybe one of the top five single greatest racers the show has ever seen.
You know, I love Scott. I think though, like Scott, the thing that makes him great is that he had stuff of his own to overcome. Like,
yes.
I think there have been
well-rounded
a lot of comparisons.
Right.
Yes.
Like, for instance, in terms of, say, like, you know, we saw, you know, Matt and Redman, where Matt was really great at almost any task that they put in front of him. Would he have been able to overcome working with Brooke?
It's true. I mean, it's this combination. Like, I don't know that I think they both had their own contributions to make to this team. I don't think it was one of these scenarios where, like, the comparisons have been drawn a lot to season three's Flo and Zach, who were also winners that nobody saw coming because one member of the team was pretty much a negative sad sack all the time, and the other one kind of carried them over the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's what we're seeing here. I think Scott's fantastic. He's the total package. He's a super fan. He's physically fit. He's smart. He's able to overcome Brooke's attitude, but he had stuff of his own that he had to fight against. And I think Brooke, maybe the untold story that we saw this season, that we didn't get a lot of press because what we saw of Brooke was a lot of crying, but she got him through several tasks where he had to confront his fears.
Yeah. I mean, would you say that she was supportive in getting him through those tasks, or she just sort of like berated him and told him he had to do it? Like, was it tough love, do you feel like, from Brooke?
I don't think Brooke was ever, I don't think she berated him. I think it's complicated what she did. I think we have to give credit to Scott for being willing to do these things without really a lot of fanfare. He never lost it.
I would have lost it along the way. So kudos to him. And again, she was very capable when she ultimately had a task that she needed to do, maybe outside the ladle incident, although she did eventually persevere. Like, I don't want to poo-poo Brooke too much, but there was a lot of the race where she's just like, no, I can't, we can't do it. Like, let's just quit, or let's just quit the task. And, you know, he pushed her, and then she was able to her credit, bounce back often after whatever was sort of getting her down. She'd sort of like have her tantrum and then get over it.
Yeah, I mean, some people need to do that. We've seen that over and over as well. Sometimes you just need to get it out of your system. I can't do this. I can't do this. I can't do this. Oh, wait, I can do it after all. I think she was a surprisingly competent racer if you just look at what she does and not how she reacts to it.
Mm-hmm. So kudos to Brooke and Scott. Job well done. They really did not even hit a bump in the road here in this final leg. They just were firing on all cylinders, much like the race car that we saw at the track. Really no misstep there for Scott and Brooke on the final leg.
Yeah, I mean, that's really, I think that's the top story here. They ran a pretty much perfect leg.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
the other two teams did not, and that is why they ended up winning the race. Like, if we want to go full David Bloomberg here and talk about why did Scott and Brooke win, they pulled out a perfect leg when it mattered.
Right. And also, I mean, they also were first place coming into this leg, right? So, I mean, they really were doing their best racing of the season at the point where it really did matter. So, peaking at the right time for Scott and Brooke.
I think they figured it out. Like, over time, they had enough people make enough mistakes that they were able to make a few of their own and start to really figure out what each other's deal was at the point where it mattered. They had that down cold.
Yeah. So good job by them. It really wasn't a close final leg. Certainly Mom and Dad had a decent run here. They come in second. Lolo, no major missteps, but they were really not in this thing by the end.
Did they know they were in a race at any point during this leg?
Yeah. I think they knew.
Maybe they knew intellectually.
Yes. What, you were really unimpressed with Lolo here in the final leg?
I really, there was not a sense of urgency, and maybe it was just because there was not a story to tell around that, but it really felt like there was no urgency whatsoever on the part of Lolo.
Yeah. Well, Jess, what did you think of this as a final leg overall? For me, I was very invested in this leg here in Chicago because, as many RHAP fans will remember, Chicago was the site of the 2016 inaugural RHAPCon, where we saw many of the landmarks that were featured here in this episode of The Amazing Race, Jess.
Yeah, well, if you'd had it in Chicago this year, we could have recreated that scavenger hunt.
I'm pretty sure they must have been there pretty close to the same time that we were there also, sometime in, you know, the summer of 2016.
Yeah, it was early summer when they filmed this. I don't have the exact dates, but yeah, it was pretty close by.
Yeah, so who knew? And the event that we did the Saturday night of the RHAPCon was at a bar that was like right across from the marquee. So we really were literally exactly where they were in the episode. So pretty cool stuff. Anyway, Jess, let's talk through this final leg of the Amazing Race and go through everything that you like. Actually, you know, I'm sorry, I asked you a question and then I didn't let you answer it in terms of the leg design.
Oh yeah, you did ask me a question, didn't
Sorry
you?
About that.
In terms of leg design, I think they've started to correct a little bit some of the mistakes that I think the last few final legs have had, where I don't think there have been in a couple of legs. I think particularly last season, there was not enough going on that any team could overtake another team at any point. Like, there was not, it was a very linear, and I think this final leg gave teams enough opportunity that if they screwed up, there was a good chance that another team could overtake them.
Yeah, Unfortunately for mom and dad and for Lolo, there were no screw-ups to be had from Scott and Brooke.
None to be had from Scott and Brooke, but at least we saw Lolo and mom and dad switch it up at least once.
Yeah, Scott and Brooke, did they have a nickname? Did they have, like, what was their hashtag? Team Scott and Brooke?
No, their hashtag was Team Will and Grace.
Team Will and Grace?
It's apt, I guess, but it didn't catch on.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was the official sanctioned CBS show that they were giving some heat to Will and Grace right when it's about to come back.
Wasn't Will and Grace an NBC show?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. That you would think that they would not be trying to hype up Will and Grace.
I guess not.
You know, there's no hashtag on NBC shows of like Mike and Molly on like different NBC reality, which we don't need to specify.
NBC doesn't have any reality, Rob. I don't know what you're talking about. But, you know, it is a fair point that this hashtag did not catch on in the same way that like Team Lolo did or Team The Boys or Team Fun.
Yeah.
So you might be onto something here. They're like, we're Team Will and Grace. They're like, that's on a different network. So we're not going to highlight that.
Wait, did Scott and Brooke call themselves Will and Grace?
Everybody adopted their own hashtags.
Okay, but what was the CBS sanctioned hashtag for them? Just Scott and Brooke?
They didn't really have one. I think like that was their hashtag. Like they said, this is what our hashtag is, and CBS is like, yeah, all right, but we're not going to promote it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, so the teams headed to Chicago in premium class, Jess. Is this standard for the Amazing Race final leg?
It's not standard, but we've seen it before.
Okay, so there you go. So you're going to need that rest. And so the first pit stop would be a literal pit stop for the teams as they would head to the Chicagoland Speedway. Now, Brooke and Scott talked about how they gate checked their bags. And Scott was talking about this like this was a really smart strategy that he had picked up. What do they mean by gate checking their bags? And how is that different than what the other teams did in this leg and what you would normally do on the Amazing Race?
Well, I think I'm not 100% sure about this, but I think what they did was I think they checked their bags and then didn't pick them up. So they were running with just their amazing fanny packs.
Hmm. But that doesn't sound like, I mean, that sounds like a good idea. But in terms of we gate checked our bags, like, wouldn't you say like we ditched our bags?
I guess. I don't know exactly what he did, but the end result was that they did not have their backpacks, so they did not have to deal with putting them into the backs of cabs. They didn't have to deal with retrieving them from baggage claim. They could just run.
Mm-hmm. So that did they just leave their bag at the airport? Is that basically like what they're saying? Then they'll go pick it up after the race? Is that they're in Chicago? I guess they feel like, is that a possibility?
I think that's a possibility. An interesting one that we've seen in the past, on the first season of Amazing Race Canada, the teams had a layover in, I think it was Ottawa, and one of the teams happened to be from Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
So they dropped their bags off at Lost and Found, and they figured when we get home, we'll go back and get them.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense. It's a good idea. And so they were a little lighter on their feet than any of the other teams in this leg. You had to go down to the speedway. Just this seemed like a kind of dangerous task for the Amazing Race.
Well, they had a co-driver and they're not other cars out there.
It was like a driver's ed car?
It's not a driver's ed car. Well, maybe it is. I don't know. I didn't see the inside of it.
Okay.
But I think if you're supervised, there's not like a whole bunch of things you can crash into.
Okay. So the teams would have to split up. One person would be in charge of doing a pit stop tire change. And then the other person would be in charge of driving around the track in under, I think, 48 seconds was the time that you needed to beat. So did you like this as a task here in the final leg, Jess?
I like that we didn't really... It was a new thing where we were able to kind of have two halves of a roadblock going on simultaneously. Like you knew who was going to do what at the beginning. And that was interesting because I think previously you usually start with a roadblock and then someone does it and then the other team member has to do the next one. And I thought this was an interesting spin on that.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that the stock cars were an interesting call out to a darker chapter of Amazing Race history. back in the much maligned Family Edition, there was a track at a race car speedway, and it turned out that one of the teams had lost their patriarch in a stock car driving accident.
Oh, no.
And were forced to confront their darkest fears in kind of a uncomfortable way, especially since this was a team that everybody else hated, that were not very much fun to watch. And so that was the thing that was going through my mind as all of this was going on.
Yeah, that is pretty dark.
It was pretty dark.
All right. Well, why don't we lighten the mood by playing a little bit of Scott coaching Brooke up through changing the tire.
Grab your nuts. Go fast.
That's excellent coaching from Scott.
Wow. Who does he think he is? Jeff Probst?
Yeah. It did seem as though that Brooke was having some trouble. You wondered if she was going to be able to get through this. I mean, she did talk about that she couldn't do it and they should just stop doing this. But I think that that was probably as dire as things got for Scott and Brooke on this leg.
Yeah, I think that was almost just reflex on Brooke's part.
Yeah.
I don't think she ever thought she really couldn't do it. I think it was just like she had to get it out of her system.
Yes. So she was able to grab all of her nuts and then get on with the task. And after a couple times around the track, Scott is going to be through. It did seem as though he actually took the most times to get through it, but they had a little bit of a lead where at least from the edit, it took him three times. I'm not sure how many other times it took Logan and ultimately Tara.
Well, everybody needed at least one screw up, it looked like, but it was unclear whether Logan and Tara completed on their second try or their third.
Okay. All right. We also saw Joey. He gets through the tire rotation. Not too many problems. It did seem as though London was having some issues with the tire rotation.
It looked like those tires were heavy, and I think both Brooke and London might have had the same problem where that tire was a little bit hard to get off of there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe it was a physical strength issue, but there was also a trick to it. And once you figured out the trick, it was nothing.
Right. And I shouldn't say it was a tire rotation. I believe that is actually a different service.
Yeah, tire rotation, isn't that where you take all the tires off and you put them back on different spots?
That's at least what I've seen done to Lightning McQueen.
Yeah, I do not drive myself, so I'm just kind of making stuff up here.
Okay. I don't think you need to actually do your own tire rotation to drive.
No, I suppose not. And I have changed a tire, although I am not a driver myself. I have changed a tire.
Okay. All right. So we end up seeing Scott and Brooke go through, and they head on down to let's go down to Victory Lane. Was the writing on the wall at the point where we were showing Scott and Brooke at Victory Lane? The episode was called Let's Go to Victory Lane, hashtag Victory Lane.
I thought that was a little premature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But on the other hand, this seems to be a thing that happens in a lot of Amazing Race seasons. Like, I was kind of musing in my previously.tv recap that the worst episodes of any given Amazing Race season are always like the first episode and the last episode. And the ones you remember are the ones in the middle. And it's a lot of times the last episode is a little disappointing because one team kind of pulls away from everybody else really early on. So I felt like that was a little bit telegraphed, but it was also like maybe they should have switched up the leg a little bit, or would it have been too on the nose to have them go to Victory Lane as like the final thing?
Yeah, it'd probably be a little on the nose. I actually really liked all the stuff at Wrigley Field. I guess as a baseball fan, I thought that sort of added something to it where I was sort of like interested to see what they were doing at the stadium, maybe a little bit more than somebody who's not a baseball fan. So I thought that the whole leg held my attention.
Yeah, I think it definitely did. I wouldn't say delete any of these tasks, but I don't know. One thing I did like a lot about the Speedway task was the way the cars were decorated.
Mm-hmm.
And I think someone with a little bit less of an Amazing Race historian bent might not have spotted this, but there were logos from like every iteration of the show over the years.
Oh,
like,
wow.
All of the old logos were painted on various sides of the cars. And it seemed like it was a really interesting detail that I didn't really trust the show to go into something that's that intricate. So I thought that was really cool.
Might be a good podcast for when we're really bored in terms of the evolution of the CBS reality Trinity logos, where Survivor, you know, they sort of change up, you know, a little bit the logo. But for the most part, the font and the logo has remained remarkably similar over 17 years, whereas the Amazing Race and Big Brother logos, tend to, you know, change every couple of years.
Yeah, I don't know if we're ever going to be that bored, Rob.
Yeah. Maybe if there's an art student that could really talk us through it, it might be a good segment at some point when we're desperate. All right. Jess, then we got to see the teams head down to Monroe Street Station, one of the only underground subway stations or train stations there in Chicago. And you needed to find a guy with a clue. Really impressed. We got to see Ernie and Cindy later on in the episode. But I don't know if you caught this, Jess, but Abba made an appearance here in this episode as the clue guy, our old friend, Abba, friend of the podcast.
Really? I must say I did not catch that, Rob.
Yeah, you did. That wasn't him?
I'm not sure that was him.
In the construction outfit, that wasn't him?
I think we would have heard a lot more about it on social media if that had been him.
One of the original people that were very hard on our podcast coverage, right?
Oh, but he wasn't hard on our podcast coverage. He was very forthcoming on his own podcast interview.
Okay. That being said, I did like this guy really did blend in with the crowd. I think that this was a kind of a tricky thing to figure out that this was the guy who was holding the clue.
Well, I thought it was kind of fun. This was a through line through this entire scavenger hunt portion of the episode where you'd have to find people. Like, there was the red and yellow stripes were on like a chessboard in the park. And then there was somebody that had it on the back of their bike. Like, he had a yellow hat and a red shirt. I thought that was kind of a fun through line.
Yeah. I feel like that you could now start to go out in like Amazing Race inspired wardrobe, where it's sort of like a yellow shirt with like a red stripe on it. And then just see if, like, if you go to the town that Amazing Race is filming in, see if like Amazing Racers come up to you asking for clues.
I mean, you could do that. Again, I don't know that I'm ever going to be that bored.
Go to the starting line wearing that, Jess, and see if anybody stops you for clues.
I used to have a handbag that had like Amazing Race colors on the strap, and I took it to Tarkon one year, and I was told that I was giving everybody negative flashbacks.
Okay. So you had to go and find this guy in the subway station. That's where we would see Scott and Brooke head to first. At this point, Tara and Joey and Lolo aren't too far behind. We'll even see Tara and Joey run behind Scott and Brooke as they are looking at their clue. And now you had to go on a little bit of a scavenger hunt around the city looking for postcards that were the answers to riddles, Jess. Did you like the incorporation of riddles into the final leg?
Well, you know, I think they're doing their best to kind of inject a little bit of puzzle solving into this program, but it seemed like everybody's solution to this was just to go and like ask people to Google stuff.
Right. And I kind of thought that the riddles came off a little low rent.
A little bit. And it's something that every time they try to do something like this, they all seem a little bit, it seems a little bit cheesy in a way that like Survivor tree mail is not even that cheesy.
Right. I mean, it just looked like it was like a piece of paper they just like printed out somewhere of like, here's three riddles.
It looked like maybe like the week before somebody had done a corporate team building exercise themed around the Amazing Race, and they just kind of recycled those props.
Yeah. So that's, they just borrowed that from some sort of like local scavenger hunt.
Yeah, exactly. Like the, you know, there used to be one that was called the Interesting Race that they would do like sort of Amazing Race themed things in various cities.
Right. I think this is the kind of thing that if you pay Kurt Clark $20 and you're in Chicago, he just has at the ready. He will just take you through this riddle of Chicago landmark trip.
It's like the precursor to escape rooms.
Yeah. So we end up seeing all the teams start to run around. There's a Gothic spire, which is some sort of water tower. There's the Buckingham Fountain and the Wabash Tower. Scott and Brooke are the one team that seems to not have any sort of snafu here. They are able to be finding exactly where they're going. But we see that Tara and Joey, mom and dad, they end up going to the wrong Gothic Tower.
Yeah, I think they got tripped up on Gothic Tower. They assumed it had to be a church.
Yeah, so they got sort of hung up there. Lolo also, I don't know what their problem was here, but they struggled.
It looked like at one point they got in a really bad cab.
Yeah.
But that was later.
They had no luck with cabs also. Not as bad as the cab who won't take them to Wienerville. We'll talk about that. So Scott and Brooke are doing a lot of running around in this leg. We know that's a bugaboo for Brooke, that Scott wants to run. Brooke doesn't. Eventually, they are going to have to go up and get the postcards to a beekeeper. But on the way, I'm not sure if this is a pre-beekeeper or post-beekeeper. They have an idea where Brooke is not running fast enough. Scott is suggesting to Brooke that she literally would get on his back. He would give her a piggyback ride and he would run through the streets of Chicago with Brooke on his back. Brooke is not so keen on this idea.
Please, one block.
Scott,
jump on the back.
No, I don't want to feel like an invalid. Let's just go.
You're not an invalid.
You can't
we talked
run with
about this.
Pounds on
yes,
your back.
I can. I crossfit with 100 on my back.
This was a missed opportunity for me, Jess.
Well, you wouldn't be able to play the old literally carrying his family on his back clip.
Scott is literally carrying his partner on his back right now.
Yeah, that is a missed opportunity.
Mm-hmm. How funny would it have been to just have like sort of like a Yoda Luke Skywalker style. Scott just runs this entire leg with carrying Brooke around.
That would have been pretty amazing. And I think it would have been some pretty incredible visuals.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that he could have her on his back. I mean, at some point he could like get her in some sort of like fireman's carry, like just like running through the streets. I mean, I do feel like with $1 million on the line, you know, adrenaline is going to kick in at some point, no?
Yeah. And it would be the best ad for CrossFit ever.
Yeah. So imagine that. Yeah, the CrossFit subscriptions that go through the roof.
If you do CrossFit, you can run a whole leg of the Amazing Race with a fully grown adult on your back.
Please, one block.
Scott,
jump on the back.
No, I don't want to feel like an invalid. Let's just go.
You're not an invalid.
You can't
we talked
run
about this.
On
yes,
your back.
I can. I CrossFit with 100 on my back.
Okay. That whole conversation was just was cracking me up about if she's an invalid or not. So we go to the roof of City Hall and we meet the beekeeper. Shades of Utopia, Jess.
I know you love any indirect reference to Utopia.
Yeah, where are the bees, Jake? Where are the bees? Yeah, it did seem as though like we had like some cutaways like the beekeeper is on the roof and he's like and then there are bees flying around. But then it looked like there were no bees flying around when the teams were going up and getting their clue from this guy.
I love every take where they cut to like the person handing the clue and they're like facing the camera and smiling and like showing the clue to the camera because, you know, that was never like. That was never something that actually happened during the race. Like, these are all things they shot beforehand.
Yeah, all pickups with that guy. Okay. So we end up with – we need to head to Wrigleyville Dogs. That's the place teams need to go for this exciting hot dog task. Maybe the low point of the tasks here in this leg, no?
It's another one of those cases where you have Bertram sitting in front of a map and he's like, well, they're in Chicago. What things do they have in Chicago? And he Googles Chicago and autocomplete says Chicago hot dogs. And he's like, yes, we will have them do hot dogs.
Okay. So here's what you need to do. Head to Wrigleyville Dogs and then what you do is you deliver the hot dogs to a bunch of Cubs fans who are such big Cubs fans. They are there and cheering on a day when there is no Cubs baseball game. That's how dedicated they are to the Cubs.
So are people that into the Cubs that they just kind of hang out in hopes that, like, at some point a baseball game might break out?
Either that, or they're such cheapskates that they heard free hot dogs at some point. They got a bunch of teams that are coming in, giving you some free hot dogs. Sit in this seat all day. I guarantee you, at some point, you will get a free hot dog.
In fairness, I've not had a hot dog from that place. Maybe they're that good. Like, maybe people are really that excited. They're not excited about baseball. They're excited about hot dogs.
Well, if you're not excited about the 2016 Cubs, then I'm not sure necessarily if you're a big Cubs fan.
That's a good point. Like, maybe what's the opposite of a fair weather fan?
A foul weather fan. Like me with the Jets. Like, I'm really pumped up about this year because I want them to go 0-16 so that I'm going to root against them every single game, as I'm really excited about this year where hope is lost, and I'm excited that we're on the same page. Like, they're going to stink and I'm rooting for them to stink so that they get the top draft pick. So I'm a foul weather fan.
That sounds great. Of course, you know, this happened to the Knicks and they still managed to screw it up.
Like, if they're like 3-4 in week 7, I'm going to be pissed.
Well, you have to make it interesting for yourself.
Yes. Okay. I talked myself into it. Low expectations, Jess. Anyway, so we see the return of Ernie and Cindy to The Amazing Race. Now, this is a little uncommon. Jess, do you remember when we interviewed Ernie and Cindy?
Yes, I do. That was very early on in our podcasting career.
Yes. They were on the podcast way back when, and they were very fun. Well, why did they have them here in Chicago? I know they live in Chicago, but we go places where amazing racers live all the time, seemingly, no?
We do, but it could be one of those scenarios, like, you know how Cochran hangs out and watches Survivor with Jeff Probst and Sia? It could be one of those scenarios, like, maybe they've remained close to the production staff, and when they heard that the race was coming to Chicago, they asked them to come and hang out.
Okay, so here's what you had to do. You go up there, you get your hot dogs, you got to put on a paper hat, you bring the hot dogs up to Ernie and Cindy and friends, and then you give out 10 hot dogs, and then Ernie will present you with tickets to said non-existent Cubs game.
Maybe they're not tickets to the Cub game. It's tickets to yourself and your own event.
Yes. Yes.
It's got very zen all of a sudden.
Yeah. So you get these tickets. Did you feel like, did Scott recognize Ernie and Cindy? I was looking for like recognition. I didn't see it with Scott and Brooke. I felt like that. I actually felt like that Joey seemed like he recognized them.
I had heard that Joey has not actually seen the show.
Okay. Maybe, I don't know if they said something or if but that was pointed out. I didn't see any sort of maybe they cut it out of the show, but I didn't see any sort of recognition with Scott.
I would have to imagine they cut it out, but maybe it was one of those things where like Ernie and Cindy were really expecting to get recognized and then they didn't. So then like the next team that comes through, they're kind of like,
hey, do you know who we are?
Yeah. Hey, hey, look at us. Look at us.
Yeah.
Do we look familiar?
Yeah. You know, Scott and Brooke have no issues giving away the free hot dogs. And honestly, how could anybody have issues? We would see the hardest part for the teams was going to be getting to the Wrigleyville hot dogs. Because we see soon after Lolo is trying to go there and they get in a cab. They don't know the address for Wrigleyville hot dogs. And the cab driver says, get out. Get out. Get out of my cab. I'm not taking you someplace you don't know the address of.
I mean, we've seen racers get kicked out of cabs before.
Yeah. You're in a cab in Chicago. I mean, Wrigleyville dogs. I mean, is it too presumptive to say, well, could you just take Mr. Wrigley Field? Could you get us close?
That's kind of what I would do, but maybe this guy didn't even know where that is.
I mean, it's Chicago. How do you not know where that is?
It could be his first day on the job.
I guess so.
Wouldn't it suck to be it's the first day on your job as a cab driver, and then you get amazing race people and a camera crew?
Right.
You're not going to be doing your best work.
Right. Okay.
No wonder he kicked him out of his cab.
Yeah, he was not happy. He was not happy with this. All right, Jess. So we are going to see now Scott and Brooke head into the Wrigley Field scoreboard. We've talked about always what's the final task going to be? Put this in order. What was this? The flags, the currency, whatever. So this was based on what placement you had in each leg of the Amazing Race, but the legs were in alphabetical order, not necessarily the order that you finished. Did you like how they did this?
I did. I thought it was I thought it was enough, like, communication and logic, and you had to figure out a way to communicate when you couldn't talk to your partner. I thought it was great. I just wonder what they would have done if somebody had placed 10th on the first leg.
Yeah, that's a good point. I wonder, I think that they probably have a number in there for, you know, it's not completely ridiculous. I'm sure in the history of the Cubs in Wrigley Field, some team has scored 10 runs in an inning.
Oh, I'm sure they have.
Yeah.
But it's probably, would it be two digits?
Yeah.
Do they have to, like, go digging in the back?
They might have a small 10. Maybe a Cubs fan can tell us what they do in that case.
That's true.
I mean,
I've never been to Wrigley Field.
Yeah, I mean, they have a 10th inning, so you imagine that they have, there's some precedent for a number that is on a, like, a different thing.
Yeah, I mean, people score 10 runs in an inning on the Mets all the time, so.
Yeah. Yeah, usually the first inning.
Usually.
Or the ninth inning. That also happens a lot.
We got guys with an ERA of 90.
All right. So we see the teams have to go through it. And again, you know, Scott and Brooke do a great job here of communicating. Scott's in the scoreboard. We see Brooke up in the, you know, with the Harry Carey style microphone. They're telling him what to do. This, you know, I like the wrinkle of the one-way communication there from the broadcast booth.
Yeah, that was fun. And I think as Scott pointed out, he's not going to be able to talk back at her.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting wrinkle.
Interesting wrinkle. All right. So we see now that Tara and Joey get to Wrigleyville Dogs. And Joey is the person who's going to carry the hot box, is what he calls it. And he gets up there. And that he has an announcement for everybody at Wrigley Field.
Who wants Raiders? Woo!
Oh,
always a crowd pleaser.
I guess.
A big reaction to Who Wants Wieners.
Who wants Raiders?
Woo! Yeah, not one like, and, you know, very, very enthusiastic. And you know, these people already got wieners from Scott and Brooke.
Yeah, I would think, like, if they'd been the first people to show up with wieners, the people might have been more excited.
It must be that good. All right. So I also Joey drops a Go Red Sox on them.
That's what I thought, where I thought you were going with
no,
this. But
no, I was going with.
Who wants wieners?
Okay. At this point, we also get Scott and Brooke are already done with the scoreboard. Brooke is having the usher check her work, not usher the musical performer.
Well, that's good. I hear he's busy these days.
He is busy. And so they have to now go down to home plate, and the umpire will give them another clue. And then this clue will be another sort of like math problem you have to figure out to get to ultimately for them. I'm not sure if it was the same section for everybody or you had a different one. Section 504.
It was a different one.
Yeah.
It was a different one. It was like 534 for Tara and Joey.
Yes. Okay. So you had to get up there and you had to go and search for the clue. Did you like the umpire?
He was all right. I think it was probably a real umpire, so they got that going for him, which is nice.
Yeah, so there you go. And then I would have liked to have seen, like, somebody, like, fight the umpire. Like, somebody should have, like, chest bumped the umpire and, like, kicked dirt on home plate.
Probably would have been Joey.
Probably. You would think so. Either that or Brooke, I think, could have also done a good chest bump of the umpire.
Yeah, she could have, but she probably would have fallen backwards because he had a pretty formidable barrel chest. And
yeah, she doesn't care. She doesn't care. She would have done it.
She would have bounced right off.
Yeah. All right. And then you have to go look for the ticket on the seat. Scott and Brooke ultimately, they find it eventually. And then head to the finish line.
Yeah. And, you know, Rob, as much fun as it is to see all these ballparks and, you know, I'm a moderate baseball fan myself. I feel like we go to the stadium well fairly often.
Yeah.
I feel like the final leg frequently involves a stadium of some stripe. And I don't know that I think we may have tapped out all of the interesting possibilities.
Yeah. I don't have at my fingertips every stadium they've done before. I mean, have they been to Citi Field? I mean, that would be a coup, right?
I don't believe they've been to Citi
Field. Okay. So that would be something. I mean, that's in the news right now.
Probably pretty easy to rent Citi Field these days.
Yeah, so that's good. All right. London and Logan, eventually, they will get to Wrigleyville. They will give away hot dogs. Boy, Ernie must really be a popular guy in Chicago. He has so many tickets to these Cubs games.
He's got the hookup.
He does have the hookup. And so we see, mom and dad are going through their numbers. They have some funny bickering back and forth as they're doing it.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. Although at this point, it's like, well, in my mind, like reality is suspended because now we don't like Tara and Joey or Lolo. They could now at this point mess up a million times. But now we're in the mode of just, OK, well, now we have to make it look like there's a chance that somebody is going to beat Scott and Brooke.
Yeah, like show the cab stuck in traffic or show them sitting there like, what if we can't find it? What if we can't find
right.
it? And there's really all of the suspense has been sucked out of it.
Right. So Scott and Brooke make a run to the finish line. And, it's always exciting to see all the old teams that are there. Boy, there are some teams that I really did not even remember were on this season. Like what was the first team? Was it Kevin, right? That was the guy's name.
Yeah, that was the guy, Kevin and Jen.
I was so excited to see them. I was like, oh, wait, who are these people? Like, oh, yeah, they're from the first night. Team Swole was still there.
Well, yeah, I think everybody gets invited back.
Yeah. So that was amazing to see everybody back there. And then again, congratulations to Scott and Brooke because really a feel-good story.
Yeah, it was. I think, as I said last week, I think it made the most sense narratively. I think we got a little bit of Joey and Tara that they were kind of the team to beat and everybody was really impressed with how well they were racing. But we didn't get enough of that. I think there was no through line on that where I think there really was for Brooke and Scott. It was like they succeeded despite themselves. And that was kind of a feel good story.
Okay. And then we ultimately will have mom and dad that they get through everything. They show up. Eventually, we'll also get Lolo show up at the final pit stop. I thought that Phil was a little dismissive of Logan when he finally showed up. Here's Logan and London at the final pit stop.
London and Logan, I am pleased to tell you that after traveling more than 36,000 miles...
Are we done yet?
You're done.
No, actually, that might have been more London saying like, all right, Phil, is this over? Can I leave? And Phil like, yeah, you're done. You're done. That's it. Enough. Get out of here.
They were kind of radiating that for about the entire second half of the leg.
Traveling more than 36,000 miles.
Are we done yet?
You're done.
Don't cut Phil off, London or Logan. Whoever you are.
I think that was Logan. I think London's yeah. voice is not that
no,
deep.
No, I know. They just said that. I get confused which one is London and which one is Logan. Just in terms of the names sometimes. But
traveling more than 36,000 miles.
Are we done yet?
You're done.
You're done. Get out of here. You disgust me.
No, that was a different team that said you disgust me.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's different friends of the podcast. Yeah. Phil this season has been very much, a little salty on the mat with these teams. He's not afraid to let loose.
Well, you know, it was an interesting thing I've observed. I feel like I think a lot of people suspected this was going to be the last season of the show. Yeah. And I think Phil was kind of phoning it in a little bit. He's like, I got to start looking for a new job.
Yes.
I don't really
have
time.
All right.
To
You're done.
Cordial.
I'm out of here. I've got to get on monster jobs here in a minute.
Yeah. Phil's like, he's on his phone in between takes combing Craigslist for gigs.
Yeah. That's it. You're done. I got to get back to my agent. Okay. So, fun stuff, though. Fun season. I think that it was Amazing Race is in an interesting place heading into season 30 whenever it comes back in terms of that we have this format, which was fun, which we liked. You have a round number. I think you have the possibility of all-stars. So who knows where the Amazing Race goes from here, Jess.
Who indeed, and who knows when we're even going to see it again. But, you know, that's okay because I think a lot of people forget that we had a really good run of about 10 years where we could reliably predict when The Amazing Race was going to be on. It was on the fall schedule. It was on the spring schedule. Started around the same time as Survivor. Ended around the same time as Survivor. And now, you know, we forget that there was a big solid chunk of time in there where we could go up to a year without seeing a season. And we never knew what night it was going to be on or what it was going to replace. And, you know, we call those the Viva Laughlin days, where we were like sitting there rooting for shows to fail so we could get Amazing Race back. And it was an exciting time, and we're in those times again, and I think everybody should be excited about that.
Okay, Jess. We got some questions from the listeners. Let's go ahead and start off with Ariel, who says, how much of a factor do you think Brooke and Scott's decision to leave their bags at the airport played into their win? Is it a rookie move to not do this in the final leg, or are there instances where players could get screwed if they don't have their bags? Did Phil give them a lift back to the airport just to put a bookend on things? I don't know if this was that big of an advantage, because it seemed as though things were pretty close, at least at the racetrack. I mean, and then we saw literally where we had Scott and Brooke reading a clue and Tara and Joey running behind them. So I don't know how much time they ultimately picked up.
It's hard to tell, but it looked like, you know, if they had made one mistake, I think Tara and Joey could have been back in it.
Right. If there was any advantage, it was a small enough one where they were reading the clue that Tara and Joey were looking for right behind them.
Yeah. I mean, they got the head start and it was just a couple of minutes, but it was really all they needed.
Okay. Just Zach Vossler wants to know, is this one of the best designed final legs ever? Numerous tasks, iconic locations, teams actually change placements. I mean, Brooke and Scott were always number one, but Lolo, Mom and Dad switched places more than once, and the teams were often in view of each other. No game-breaking cab shenanigans to speak of. And a guest appearance by Cindy and Ernie?
It was a good leg. I think it was well designed. I liked everything they did. I liked that it was close, but not, you know, I think it could have been closer. I think I would have liked to have seen a little more switching up. I feel like season 27 had a very good final leg where there was quite a bit of switching between the first few teams. I want to see more brain power. Mm-hmm. I want to see memory tasks that are actually complicated.
Yeah.
Like I want to see season 14 had a really complicated final memory task that just about like destroyed people.
Jess, Jim Rosario wants to know, did any teams exhibit any gameplay that we've never seen before, or was it by the book? As my friend Miles Nye, or our friend Miles Nye might say, was there emergent gameplay this season?
I don't know that I would say that there's emergent gameplay, but I do think people had to adapt in new ways over the course of the season, just because none of them were racing with anybody that was known to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the game itself changed around them, but I didn't see anybody do anything that kind of blew my mind about, wow, they're breaking the game.
Mm.
I think we saw some very savvy use of the U-turn, but it wasn't anything we haven't seen people do before.
Reinventing how this game is played!
Yes, okay. So no game changers for this season.
No, Amazing Race game changers, well, you know, that's out there. That's a possibility.
Okay. This is an interesting question from Lita, who says she searched Brooke and Scott on Twitter to see what the general reaction was, and pretty much every single tweet is outrage / negativity. I found this shocking because I thought that Brooke and Scott were incredibly fun to watch, and I've been rooting for them for weeks, along with a lot of people in the group, I think. Do you find this consensus surprising, or is this just a classic disconnect between casuals rooting for good people versus good TV?
Well, yeah, the reaction I saw got kind of meta. It was like, I can't wait to see what the reaction is on the official Facebook page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, I thought Brooke was excellent TV, but I also know that she was very negative, and I think people that are looking for an escape don't necessarily want negativity.
Right. I do feel like that still never plays in terms of like the overall like general TV audience. Somebody who is super negative, I think that person is probably always going to be, you know, very, very poorly received by the people who are watching the TV show. I mean, in CBS reality, the one sort of through line is that the person who is just the nice people tend to be better received by than the people who are, you know, overly strategic and certainly people with that are ill-tempered.
Yeah, like nobody wants to spend their evenings watching a grouchy person.
All right. And Albert Vargas wants to know, I think it's fitting that Scott is a big enough fan to know the particular season that Amazing Race was at the Chicago Water Tower, but didn't recognize the guest former winner. See, he didn't think, Albert doesn't think he recognized Ernie also. The star of the show has always been the locations that they traveled to.
Well, not to throw shade on Scott's knowledge of the show, but he was actually wrong about which season it was.
Oh! All right. Well, great job. If we have an opportunity to speak with them, we'll definitely get Scott's side of whether or not he recognized Ernie and or Cindy.
I feel like that is reason enough to try to reach out to them.
Yes. Albert also says, I felt bad for them that that Ernie and Cindy were not recognized. Maybe they needed a shirt that said Ernie, Cindy, Amazing Race.
It's sort of like what Joey and Kelsey had on there. You know, they had the hats with their names on them.
Yes, yes. I think that would have helped. All right, Jess, fun season, fun recap. It's been great getting back to do one of these season recaps with you after, a year hiatus of doing them, right?
Yeah, I mean, I missed this.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll see over the summer if we get word in terms of the U.S. Amazing Race coming back. I know that you always have the coverage of the international Amazing Race. Do you have any updates on what's going on with Amazing Race Canada?
Amazing Race Canada, as far as I know, is still a go. It's going to be probably end of this month, and Dan Heaton and I will be bringing you the same old wrap-ups that we always do.
Okay. All right. Jess, do we have a hashtag for this round, this final act of Amazing Race 29?
Well, we had Who Wants Wieners.
Okay. I'm not sure necessarily what happens if you click that hashtag, but it certainly did make me laugh enough every time I heard the clip.
Who wants wieners?
Woo! Woo! Yes. Also, you know, kudos to mom and dad and to Lolo for a hard fought race as well.
It was really, they contributed a lot to a great season, I think. And I feel like this was one of the strongest casts we've ever had. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited to see what the show does next. And if they throw a weird ass twist at us, I may not be so quick to dismiss
it. Well, yes, to speak to your point about the casting, I do think that a lot of times with these Amazing Race teams, like you have one person who's really the star, and then you have another person who's kind of like, they're okay. And so I think we were able to weed out, for the most part, a lot of the also-rans. And I think that, like, the most iconic teams that we've had in Amazing Race history have probably been the people that, like, both people on the teams are stars, where we were able to have a season with, for the most part, we had, like, a really strong casting in both members of the team.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it goes back to what we were saying about how, you know, we would have gotten like Floyd and his best friend Steve, who never talks, and they would have been all right. And we would have been like, oh, it's the Band Geeks. They're okay. But instead, we get Floyd and Becca. Mm-hmm. And it was fantastic. They're one of the best teams of all time.
Yeah. All right. Well, great job, Jess. And lots of fun. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say on robinswebsite.com. And big thanks to Scott St. Pierre editing all of our Amazing Race podcasts this season. So enjoy the Amazing Race off season, everybody. Take care. Have a good one. Bye.